Good evening. Welcome to Speak Up Arkansas. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host today. And we're going to have many critical programs that Arkansans rely on are under threat. In 2013, Arkansas passed an expanded Medicaid program that helped the state's uninsured rate drop from 23% to just 11% by 2016. This expanded Medicaid program provided more Arkansans the security to no longer be one medical emergency away from bankruptcy, and those with chronic illnesses the safety that constant health care provides. But Arkansas's expanded Medicaid program will likely be rolled back, and many people who counted on the program will lose coverage. Another important program, SNAP, also known as food stamps, has already been impacted by policies that decrease access to that program. What exactly are the proposed changes to Medicaid? How will changes to SNAP affect Arkansans? And what can you do about these changes? That's our topic today, and here to join me in this discussion are three guests: Mr. Bruno Showers, who is the Health Policy Fellow at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families; Ms. Tommy Townley, who is the Outreach Manager at Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, focusing on older adult and SNAP programs; and Mr. Bill Kopsky, who is the Executive Director of Arkansas Public Policy Panel. I think we'll start. I want to ask each of the guests to sort of introduce them, their organization, and what are some of the comments or topics that we're going to be talking about, so our listening audience has a sense of what they're going to be listening to this coming hour. Bruno, I'll start with you.
Sure. Hey, Paul. My name is Bruno Showers with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I'm our Health Policy Fellow. Today I'll be talking about the changes that are coming to Arkansas Works. We've requested permission from the federal government to make several changes, and I'll be trying to highlight some of the most salient ones, or some of the most harmful, in my opinion, ones, and I'm looking forward to it.
Right. And you wrote a report about this, right?
Correct.
Okay. Tommy, what is, I know you're with Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, and what kind of issues are you going to be talking about?
Right. Thank you for having me. So today I'm going to be talking about what we've learned so far since the waiver that allowed people who are subject to a time limit or a work requirement under the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. What has happened since that waiver was removed in 2016? So we kind of have a little bit of a case study to look at to see what happens to people who need access to public benefits that are unable to access those benefits once something like this goes into place. Right. So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about
today. And so their work requirements both apply to SNAP but also to Medicaid.
Well, they don't quite yet, but we anticipate that they will
soon.
Oh,
that's right. They're trying to get that approval. Yeah. Bill, how about you? I know the public policy panel discusses a lot of things and focuses on vulnerable populations, but what would you like to be discussing some today, or what's on your mind?
Well, sure. Well, the panel, we do community organizing across the state, mostly in low-income communities, but then we also have a state coalition called the Arkansas Citizens First Congress that has 68 member organizations, and we our membership is elected. Continuing expansion of Medicaid in Arkansas is one of our top priorities because it's so vital to the state's future. It's insuring over 300,000 Arkansans and really playing a vital role in the state meeting its budget. I'm going to be talking a lot today, first of all, just to understand Bruno and Tommy are really the policy experts, so to understand their perspectives, but also talking about what we can do about it in terms of contacting our lawmakers and the governor's office and making sure that our voices are heard in determining the state's future.
Well, thanks to all of you for spending some of your time and sharing your expertise with us. And I want to remind listeners that you can be a part of this conversation. You can call us at 501-433-0088. Or for those shy persons who don't want to be on the radio but are have a question or a comment to make, you can email us at speakupar@gmail.com. I have that on my phone, and I'll be monitoring it to see if you have any questions, comments, or anything else to share with us about this. So, again, you can call us at 501-433-0088. Well, let's talk about what is Arkansas Works? What does that mean? And I've heard it, but what is it?
Sure. We sort of hinted at it here, but I'll be explicit about it. It's the Medicaid expansion program we have in Arkansas. Medicaid expansion was enabled by the Affordable Care Act, more commonly known as quote-unquote Obamacare. Uh-huh. So I think it was in 2014 when we expanded coverage under what was then known as the private option. It's a little bit different than Medicaid expansion in other states because we use public dollars to buy private insurance and basically give people private insurance but subsidized through the government. I would say it's been very successful, as Bill mentioned. Over 300,000 people at one time were insured by Arkansas Works. We've led the nation in reducing the uninsurance rate in Arkansas, thanks to Arkansas Works. It went from like almost 30% of adults being uninsured to now it's around 11 or 12% of adults. Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to talk about some of the other benefits to the state of reducing our unemployment rolls by that much. One of the primary drivers of bankruptcy in Arkansas before Medicaid expansion in Arkansas Works was medical costs. And so this has lowered the bankruptcy rates in the state. It's also lowered uncompensated care for doctors and for hospitals. And that's been particularly vital in rural parts of the state where rural health centers were really on the edge of their viability and ability to survive. And in a state like Arkansas, where so much of our population is rural, our ability to maintain strong public health organizations and hospitals and health clinics and doctors in those rural parts of the states is really vital to the state meeting its population's needs. And it just can't be understated how important Medicaid expansion in Arkansas Works has been in preserving our rural health infrastructure in the state.
And I think it also, in sort of another way, increased the number of kids who were enrolling in Our Kids First, because once their parents got enrolled, then they thought also about their kids. And so that was something else that also, I think, helped.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the benefits just continue to tick off. I mean, it also plugged over a $150 million hole in the state budget by moving costs from the state budget over to the federal budget. And so if we don't continue to expand Medicaid, the legislature and the governor are going to have to find $150 million in cuts to make in other state services, which would impact nearly every Arkansan. And so there's really how vital this is to the state's future. It'd be hard to understate.
And the money that came in gets turned over again in other economic things.
Absolutely.
And so it's not something they put in savings. It's something they put out there in the marketplace, and so the salaries and all that stuff get turned over and over, and really, I don't know anyone knows the numbers, but I'm sure it was an economic boom.
There was a study done, and I maybe could pull it up before we're done, but the economic benefit to the state is tremendous.
Yeah, right.
Not to mention, I mean, just the public health impact of people who were uninsured prior to this, that now they have access, they're able to address some of the overall needs that they've had for quite a while, and just on the ground, at least when we help people apply for the SNAP program, not having to worry about those medical expenses that they weren't able to pay for before is huge.
Right, right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I just wanted to sort of double down on that. It's been a not just good for public health, but I mean, it's made our healthcare system more efficient. People are less likely to go to the ER. When they have insurance, they're more likely to have a regular physician, which builds trust between the provider and the patient, which is good for their health. And it has really helped with people getting preventive care, getting prescription drugs filled. We've seen a huge reduction in the number of people who are putting off things like that, putting off necessary care because they can't pay. Uh-huh. So it's been good for a lot of reasons, obviously.
Right. So what's not to like about it? And which leads to the next question. So what are their proposed changes to Arkansas Works, and what prompted these proposed changes?
Oh, well, so there's a lot of changes. The two or three most high-level ones would be the new requirement to work, which is, I assume we'll get into this a little bit more, but basically mandating that adults who aren't taking care of dependent children, so ages 19 to 50
economic
would... Ages 19 to 50 would be required to work or do qualified work activities for 80 hours a month. Another change is changing the eligibility level. Right now, it's everybody who makes 138% of the federal poverty level or less, it qualifies for Arkansas Works. They're changing that to 100% of the federal poverty level. So that's for an individual that's going from somewhere about $17,000 a year to maybe $12,000 a year. So it's a pretty significant reduction in the number of people who would qualify. DHS has said that that would kick about 60,000 people off the program.
Okay.
And the third change is a little bit more out in the policy weeds, but basically, the way that Medicaid currently works is it covers a certain amount of months before you enroll into the program under what's known as retroactive eligibility, so that, you know, if you have a major medical disaster and don't have coverage, but you did qualify for Medicaid and get it, it doesn't totally wipe out your finances and bankrupt you. The state wants to get rid of retroactive eligibility, and so basically we're only on the hook for paying for the insurance or the health care costs from the time you enroll.
Okay, and what are the folks who are, you said it was 60,000 people was sort of an estimate.
Right.
And where are they, what do they have to fall back on?
Well, so the sort of stated thing that they have to fall back on would be marketplace coverage.
Okay.
Under the
private insurance.
Right, right.
And there's no subsidy or anything for achieving that? Or?
Well, there are subsidies on the marketplaces, silver level plans and that kind of thing. You can get subsidies for it. The issue is that we have pretty good evidence that suggests that for lower income people, especially near the poverty line in that 100 to 138% yeah. range, they're very sensitive to even small cost increases. In other states that have implemented similar things, cut back enrollment limits, basically it's like maybe one out of five people who previously were covered through Medicaid ended up actually maintaining coverage on the marketplaces. We don't know what the exact number will be in Arkansas, but that's not an encouraging statistic.
Yeah, there's quite a few barriers between accessing, you know, the applicant and then accessing a program on the marketplace. I know just trying to get people there sometimes if they have limited knowledge about where to go, how to do it, how much money they might have the next month or the following month, it could be incredibly challenging after receiving Medicaid expansion for, you know.
So somebody making 13,000 to 17,000.
They're rich.
You know, yeah. Rich, I mean, those are, doctor. Yeah, they're yeah. too... Yeah, they're too limited wealthy to get, be a part of the Medicaid expansion.
And Paul, you alluded to this earlier, but so I looked up the number real quickly, and the Arkansas Hospital Association released a report that found that the Medicaid expansion in Arkansas contributed over $500 million to the GDP, or about 0.5% of our growth in 2014. which is really significant. And then disposable personal income for Arkansans grew just because of the Medicaid expansion to $245 million, or grew by $245 million. So this is really solid evidence, again, that this is good for the state, good for the people of the state. And these proposals that are basically looking to find ways to wean people or to cut people out of access to health care are really counterproductive. They're counterproductive for families' health, but they're also, frankly, counterproductive for the economy and the future of the state.
Right. And so that reminds me to answer your other question about what, so why are we doing these changes if it seems like, you know, we're saying that they're bad? And maybe Bill might have more to offer about this, but basically, even though you save money on the back end, it is an upfront investment. And so the fact that we have pursued tax cuts so aggressively in Arkansas, I think, is very related to these changes that we're making.
So they cut taxes and say they don't have enough money to
exactly.
pay for this.
Well, I think the other thing that you need to look at is the extreme right wing, the Koch brothers and others, have just invested billions of dollars across the country and hundreds of millions of dollars in Arkansas. Into political races, trying to support lawmakers who are opposed to providing healthcare access to low-income people. And so I think the governor is trying to walk a very fine line. Medicaid expansion is passed in Arkansas by a single vote through the legislature every single time it's been brought up. The margin is razor thin. And so I think they're looking for ways to placate that far right that are investing so much money into our political system, most of it secretly. And that's really, frankly, to be totally blunt, that's what's driving this discussion. It has nothing to do with policy. It has everything to do with politics, and that's what makes it particularly disturbing.
Well, isn't there an impact on the amount of more money that the state's going to have to pay as they go down into the future? In other words, the match from the federal government is decreasing to some extent?
Correct. When we first expanded Medicaid, basically it started out 100% of the costs were carried by the federal government. And by 2020, I think, they'll only be taking up 90% of the costs, and the state will be on the hook for 10%, I believe. It might be 5, but I think it's 10.
Right. But even with those numbers, the Arkansas, even when we're investing that amount of money, the Hospital Association report and several others have also found the same, that the state still vastly benefits economically, not to mention the public health of the
Not just independent analysts like the Hospital Association. I mean, the Stevens group that the state itself hired to do this analysis for them officially said that even after we share the full 10%, we're still positive in terms of
economic revenue
for the state. Well, not just economic, but specifically revenue to the state.
Right.
So it's not
through taxes paid by people who are spending $200 million more dollars in the state.
So as my grandmother would say, these proposals are really the far right trying to cut their noses to spite their faces. This is just absolutely backwards policy for the state.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like an attack on the poor. I mean, what you just talked about is definitely contributing to these proposals, and I think that any time that we're talking about limiting people's access to necessary services, that it is very short-sighted. We're talking about limiting their access to getting help that they need, limiting their access to being able to afford food, limiting their access to housing and all sorts of things. And the reality is we're talking about people who feel totally disenfranchised and don't feel like they're a part of the conversation. And some of those funding sources, like you said, they're secret and don't know how to combat them. So
when you're limiting their ability to health care, which keeps them employed, and probably increases productivity and all that other things that go along with having a sense of security that your children are going to be covered and that if something really bad happens, you can recover from it. Tommy, how are these changes similar to those already made for SNAP?
So they phrase the waiver being removed in 2016, started on January 1st, as, you know, encouraging...
The waiver being...
Oh, sorry. We were eligible for a waiver. The whole reason why we're talking about a work requirement around SNAP was originally because of a welfare reform change in the 90s.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So when that happened, when welfare reform happened, they imposed work requirements for people who were eligible for things like TANF, Temporary Aid to Needy Families, mm-hmm. and to any other general welfare programs.
Right.
So when that happened and they started, you know, making people work in order to get some food assistance and to get some just general welfare assistance, what they found out is that they did not have the infrastructure to require that. So they allowed states to apply for these waivers that would essentially make the state able to offer benefits and still encourage work, but do it on a voluntary basis. So what happened is, because we had all of these high unemployment rates in Arkansas and persistent poverty counties, we consistently qualified for this waiver. And then our unemployment rates started to fall, which is a good thing. I know that there's still a lot of people who are underemployed, unemployed, or struggling just to make ends meet in the state. So when that waiver was removed, that allowed our state to enforce this work requirement. And I'm hesitant to call it a work requirement because it's really a time limit. Starting in April of 2016, people started losing their benefits because they hadn't reported that they were working. So somebody might have been working but didn't know that they maybe it was a short amount of time, hadn't reported it, and then they needed to reapply all over again because they were sanctioned off of the program. So these work requirements definitely apply to people in that same age range, 19 to 49, and people who are not living with children, people who are not receiving disability benefits, people who might be taking care of somebody, but it's not a formal relationship. There's all sorts of gray area that the state seems to struggle sometimes to understand, and then the applicant also seems to struggle to understand. So even if somebody is eligible and gets cut off, they might not know the steps they need to take to get back onto the program. So really what it is, it's a time limit. You get 3 months of benefits within a 3-year time period. And if you don't find a job after that and you don't report it to the state, then you're not eligible for that 3-year time period. So our clock started ticking January 1st, 2016. It will be up in 2019. And now, because of HB 1462, the General Assembly will decide if we can apply for a waiver again. And that's all based on unemployment rates. So,
well, I wonder what percentage of the folks who actually were receiving SNAP benefits were not working.
So yeah, all of the statistics show that a large population of the SNAP group are working or have worked within a year of their application. So I believe,
or can, in there, if they want to pursue education or things like that, or are in some sort of training, that counts also.
Yes. Ideally, if you are sanctioned because you're not working or you're not in a training program or you're not in school, there would be a slot available for you, right? Like, you get cut off of this program and then you get put into a position where you can meet that requirement. But the states don't have any legal ramifications for not doing that. So many areas of our state, there are not employment and training programs, there are not jobs available, or the jobs that are available, people who are subject to this time limit don't qualify for, or, you know, don't have transportation, have a limited support system.
What about caring for a parent or that sort of thing? Is that a part of the...
Yeah, so that would exempt you. That is an exemption. Or if you're caring for a child that may not be your child, if you're caring for a dependent in some way, then you would, you know, that you would be exempted from this rule. But you have to be able to prove it, and you have to be able to turn that proof into the DHS office.
Okay. All right.
And Bruno, you found in your report that similarly that most people on Arkansas Works are also either working or would qualify for an exemption.
Well, so we don't have direct data on a state level for Arkansas specifically, but nationally speaking, in the Medicaid program. Basically, nearly it's like 60% of people are working, and of the remaining people, basically nearly all of them are doing something else, like they're in school or they're taking care of a incapacitated relative, or they themselves are facing some sort of physical or mental illness that prevents them from working. Right. So, like, nationally, it'd be like less than 10%, and I would even say probably less than 5% of people that either aren't working or wouldn't qualify for some kind of exemption under one of these.
You know, and I think an important thing to raise here, so, you know, when I've talked to Arkansas lawmakers about this, they either just don't believe that, and they think that everybody who's receiving Arkansas Works health care is some lazy person taking advantage of the system, even though there's no data to support that. Or they have that one or two stories about that person that they know that's lazy and just gaming the system and yada, yada, yada. But I think the real important point is that, so if you look at the actual data and how many of the people who are receiving health care through Arkansas Works are actually working, what those legislators are talking about doing is hurting working Arkansans so they can punish that one lazy person that they think they know mm-hmm. with no data behind that. And it's just outrageous to think that you would punish, hundreds of thousands of working Arkansans so you can go after this small little handful of imaginary people that these lawmakers think are out there gaming the system.
Yeah, solution looking for a problem.
Absolutely.
And it's not a free solution either. It's very expensive to mm-hmm. implement these systems and to monitor and enforce work requirements. So we were talking about how the program actually saves money. This is going to kick people off the program, but it might not even save the state money in the long run, because we'll have to implement, monitoring. We'll have to give people some way of calling in or some way of going online or going to a DHS office and reporting that they've either worked or that they're still taking care of someone. That those things aren't free, and the state has not specified how they're going to pay for those things.
And just to further go down the rabbit hole of this, how extreme this proposal is, one of the main reasons why people sometimes have a hard time working is because of inability to access health care. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, our lawmakers could be making our unemployment situation worse, putting more people into a state of dependence on government help by removing their access to health care, which is actually, instead of incentivizing work, which I totally agree with, but this is going to do the opposite. This is going to make it harder for working families to maintain employment, because a lot of working families are going to lose their access to health care. And the governor and lawmakers can say all day long that's not true. All the data, all the experience from every other state shows that that's true. So again, what they're talking about doing is hurting working Arkansans, hurting the state overall, spending more money to get a worse outcome on employment and a worse outcome on poverty. It's absolutely wrongheaded.
Absolutely. And the other reality is Medicaid is not a work program. SNAP is not a work program. So when we're talking about these administratively complex responses to a problem that doesn't seem to exist, when we know that the majority of people who are on SNAP are working or are looking for work or are taking care of their families, or like you said, are struggling with their own mental health and physical health potentially. I know at least for SNAP, what they identify these folks who are subject to this time limit is able-bodied adults without dependents, which is a complete misnomer for the most part. The majority of these ABODs, able-bodied adults without dependents, are not able-bodied. They are maybe in that limbo waiting to apply for disability benefits because they haven't been able to work because of a physical or mental health issue. Or they have various other responsibilities, like many of us do, taking care of family, trying to basically just survive and support the people that are helping them out. So.
And you said, I think, Tony, in your discussion about this isn't a work incentive, Arkansas Works, because if they're not working, there's really nothing available to help overcome that.
And I mean,
There's very little of
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And the
particularly in rural areas or some other, yeah.
Right. There might be a program available. There's employment and training programs available in different counties of the state. I know Goodwill is one of the partners locally. Our house is one of those partners. So there are resources out there. I think that alone is not a solution to this lack of ability to get employment and to keep employment, and not only employment, but something that will help people sustainably stay above water. So you might be able to find a part-time gig, but you wouldn't be able to survive on that part-time gig.
I think it's also really important to remember that those programs to help people improve their skills and get better jobs already exist, and none of them are sitting around with open doors waiting for someone to walk in. They're all already in full demand. The people in Arkansas, we're hardworking here. They want to get better jobs. They want to get better skills. And they're already taking advantage of those programs. Mm-hmm. If the governor and the legislature want to expand those programs, make them more accessible, I am all for that. I think that's the best idea in the world. But to mandate it, actually, again, it punishes the very people that you claim you care about. And it results in a worse outcome, because one of the primary reasons why people are sometimes unable to work is because of their inability to access healthcare or access food for their families. And so, again, it's achieving a worse outcome for what they claim they care about, and it's being punitive to both to many working families and to the state. There is a better way to achieve. If the goal is to get more Arkansans working, I think everybody listening to this radio program agrees with that goal. And there are better ways to achieve that than this.
Right. In fact, I want to remind listeners, if you're a SNAP recipient, if you're a Medicaid recipient, if you've had experience with this, please give us a call and tell us your story and your view on it. You can contact us at 501-433-0088, or you can do an email at speakupar, all one word, at gmail.com. And, okay. Well, and you talked about we're punishing people. Well, what you're talking about is having to report, having to make reports, having to respond to something you may not even be aware of, having to fill out paperwork, having to take off work to go to the DHS office to prove your case or whatever else. But the bottom line is it's just making it more difficult.
The work requirement part makes it more difficult, but lowering the income threshold from 138,000 down to 100,000, that's just kicking 60,000 people off to be mean. I mean, that has nothing to do with giving the people, you know, an extra step to jump through to get health care. It's simply cutting off their access to health care.
Yep. Okay. Agreed. It's purely a cost saving measure, because once they're on the marketplace, it's purely federal subsidies and the state doesn't need to pick up any part of the costs of their care.
And again, it's a cost saving measure. Yep. That's likely to cost more money to implement, because if those people then don't get on the federal Medicaid system, they end up again going presenting for uncompensated care. Yep. Or losing their job because they're having to take care of their sick kid or their sick spouse or their sick parent without access to a doctor. No matter how you slice it, these proposals accomplish the opposite of what they're being billed to achieve.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the SNAP a little bit more, but how much money does the average SNAP recipient receive?
So on average in Arkansas, a household will receive $113 a month, which translates to about $1.26 per person per meal for a month. So we're talking about, and you know, in the field, this is more like an average working family household. So $113 could help supplement some of the food that you might struggle to afford by the end of the month. Other household composition, like older adults, people who are receiving disability benefits, they're going to receive a little bit less or a little bit more depending on some of the other expenses and income they have.
Right. And you mentioned a limit of 3 years and then you'd have to reapply. Is that right?
Yeah. So
How long can they? I mean, can they, as long as they reapply every 3 years, can it continue?
If they apply, it all depends on each individual case, of course, but ideally, if within that 3-year clock, if they use up that 3 months of the benefit that they're eligible for when they're not working or they're not meeting some other exemption, they could then apply after they find employment or after they start a training program or after they start maybe building a family. If they have if somebody's pregnant or if somebody's injured in the household, if they meet an exemption, they could then apply for SNAP. I think the challenge is that many of the exemptions and many of the requirements under this time limit or work requirement rule for SNAP are not housed in the case file that DHS has. So they're now having to report something that in the past years has never been something they've had to report. And what we know about this population is that they're not even really meeting that 100% of the federal poverty line. Many of the people who lost benefits under this rule are living at 50%, so maybe $6,000 a year or less, which, you know, like you said, one accident away or one missed bill away from being homeless or potentially not having your car anymore. So any sort of hit to supports that help them meet their basic needs could have a huge impact. And now they're going to get hit again, it seems like, with this Medicaid work requirement. So they feel hopeless. And, you know, they are relying on more of the emergency food system, but what we know about food pantries and food banks is they are not able to meet all of the needs of people who are food insecure, that there needs to be these other nutritional programs to pick up that slack and to be a sustainable resource for people. So
Okay, well I wonder how long what's the average amount of time that an Arkansan, from what we already know, is on SNAP?
So not this population specifically. Yeah. So I kind of got mixed reviews when I looked it up. It looks like about 31% are on the program anywhere between like 1 to 12 months. Uh-huh. And then about 38% are on the program between like 37 and 48 months. And that larger population in the longer certification periods are usually people whose income doesn't change, whose expenses don't change, people who are reliant on Social Security or disability benefits or, you know, some sort of supplemental security, anything that would be just a fixed income that they're receiving every month.
And that's the older adult section of SNAP.
Yes, that I try to focus on, because that's it's a large group that is underutilizing that program, and we know that the older adult population is going to continue to grow, so we want
people what's the age cutoff where you don't have to have work? Do you have to have a work requirement even if you're
No, so the work requirement under SNAP only affects people who are between the ages of 18 and 50.
Okay. And I
think it's important to remember when you hear that, you know, we're looking at state averages, but when you hear that some people are needing food assistance longer, that the unemployment rates in Arkansas vary wildly from county to county. So Northwest Arkansas is booming, and incomes are rising. Unemployment rates are extraordinarily low. And if you're educated and have certain things going for you, there's certainly poverty in those counties, but there are opportunities in those counties. There are other counties in Arkansas. I just looked it up. Chico County, Jackson County, Phillips County all have over twice the state average of unemployment. And so there are just simply not opportunities, no matter what your education, no matter what your training, in certain parts of the state. And people there who have families or in other circumstances, you know, they still have a basic human right to food and to access to health care. And for the state to pretend that they're lifting people out of poverty by cutting people's access to food and health care is just preposterous on its face. They're pushing people further into poverty. And again, the solution, we all agree with the solution. We want to lift people out of poverty. The solution to that is to provide more opportunities, more ladders out of poverty, not more punitive hammers dropping on folks' heads as they try to climb that ladder.
How much of the state revenue is invested in SNAP? I mean, is it a fully federal funded, or is it?
The program benefits, yes, are fully federally funded. I mean, and well, according to the Trump budget, they would like this is a big piece of conversation because they want to put 25% of that responsibility onto the state, which really would be a block grant that we would have to then figure out. And what we know is the state does not have the capacity to bear that 25% because, yes, SNAP is a federal program.
And so the state gets federal money to administer it?
Correct.
So they're just trying to reduce that not because it saves the state money, but it makes a point, I guess.
I think that they want to shrink the
role of government in people's lives.
It's the war on the poor is what it really is. It's a war on low-income people.
Well, and this conversation about, you know, when we see drops because of a work requirement under SNAP, the first year or the first few months, 24,000 people lost their benefits. What I hear a lot of the Republican lawmakers say about that is like, look, the participation rates are down. That must mean that our economy is rising and that, you know, there's not this need any longer. And what the truth is that they've been cut off and sanctioned because of something that maybe they didn't have any control over.
What that also means is there's 24,000 families with kids who are hungry now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. All right, callers, I know you're out there. Give us a call here at 501-433-0088. We've got folks who can answer specific questions, I'm sure, but also share a little bit about, and we maybe get on to that, so what do we do about, what do you think the long-term effects of these work and income requirements on SNAP and Medicaid are going to be? And what can our listening audience and those who are being affected by this do about it?
Well, I can think of the answer to the first part of that question. I think someone else might need to figure out what we do going forward. But the long-term effects, it's going to be pretty bad. Something that Tommy said actually sort of reminded me. I think that the fact that the economy is actually pretty good right now is something that is letting them get away with doing this, because relatively speaking, jobs are plentiful now as compared to how they were, say, in 2009 or 2010. But for instance, there's no provision to let these Medicaid work requirements be waived because it's a bad economy. I mean, if the general unemployment rate is 20%, we're still going to have to administer work requirements. People are still going to have to work to get their Medicaid. So I think that it's very short-sighted and sort of not thinking about the state government, the public investments we need to make in a long-term perspective. They're thinking very narrowly in the next year or two, you know, the next budget vote kind of thinking.
Yeah. And for SNAP, I would say it means less food on the table. It means higher rates of, or, you know, more visits to a food pantry, which means food pantries are strapped more and might have to give away less food. I think it means, you know, frustration with this system. They already feel pretty hopeless, or at least this the able-bodied adults or the people who are subject to this time limit already feel like, okay, well, I've lost my benefits, I'm not going to reapply. They don't understand some of this stuff. So I definitely think that there will be an impact down the road of people struggling to get what they need to eat.
You know, I think that to answer the question of what we can do about it, we need to contact our lawmakers, we need to contact our state legislators, and we need to contact the governor and tell them that what we want is we want a strong social safety net providing a ladder for people up out of poverty, and that we want true, real solutions to how to lift people out of poverty. Arkansas legislature, I think it was either 4 or 6 years ago, had a task force on poverty and came out with a whole set of recommendations. And the legislature implemented the bare minimums of those recommendations. And the reason why is it didn't match the ideology of this right wing that's taking hold of the legislature. It didn't say to do punitive things, because punitive things, lo and behold, don't work. What it said we needed to do is invest in ladders out of poverty instead of punitive measures punishing people who are in poverty. Uh-huh. And they said that we need to invest more in making our food network and protections from hunger stronger. We need to improve. Again, we've already gone over the numbers of how good the Medicaid expansion has been for everybody in Arkansas. It's lowered our overall health care costs. It's preserved our rural health system. It's boosted the economy. It is good for every single person in this state that Medicaid expansion is covering 300,000 people in the state right now. It is bad for everybody in this state when we start cutting 60,000 people off because they make too much money at $16,000 a year, which almost makes me laugh. It is bad for the state when we put a work requirement on there that's going to punish people who actually are working by trying to go after imaginary people who lawmakers think aren't, with no analysis and data behind it. We need to hold our lawmakers accountable for doing the things that will actually solve the problem of poverty in Arkansas and not make the situation worse. These proposals make the situation worse.
Are all of these ideas set in stone right now, or is there any way to change them?
Well, as far as Medicaid is concerned, we've changed the Arkansas Works program, I think, basically every single year that we've had it. We've changed it.
The Medicaid program?
Correct,
yeah.
Correct.
We just rename it.
Right. It was originally private option, and then it was Arkansas Works, and now it's Arkansas Works again, sort of 2.0. So we could change it. The question is sort of goes back to what Bill was saying about the public and what the will is with our elected officials and whether or not they're going to desire to go in that direction. Something else Bill said, that was a beautiful speech, Bill. But it reminds
me. I put my soapbox away.
Well, seriously, though, it reminds me, as bad as welfare reform was in the 90s, this is much worse than that, because that was sort of a package deal where you now need to work to get your public assistance, but they did actually fund additional, workforce services. They'll pay for transit and child care costs. There's nothing like that in these Medicaid work requirements. When the federal government released their memo outlining them, it specifically encourages the state, you should fund these things, but it also says, we're not going to give you money to do it, You can't use Medicaid dollars for that, so figure it out.
Yeah.
And we haven't. We're just saying that we're not going to do anything on that end.
To piggyback off of the contacting your elected officials, I think that out in the field, working with people who are recipients of benefits or know people or are close with people who are recipients of benefits, recognizing that you know more than you think that you do and that your voice is incredibly important in this conversation. The Farm Bill will be voted on this year. It has a deadline of September. Massive piece of legislation that includes many of the things that touch our food that, shows up on our table. And very importantly, I think we need to preserve this specific program, food stamps, SNAP, all of the other nutrition programs that help people get the things that they need. And then I would say on the upper level, if you have an audience or if you have the ability to pass the microphone to people who are living this experience and give them the opportunity to speak for themselves, I think that's also key to this conversation.
If I could throw in one more thing on this, there's a couple of key opportunities where you can particularly make your voice heard. So one point is that in Arkansas, for a state legislator to hear from 5 or 10 constituents is a riot. So it's not like you need thousands of calls coming in. And for a lot of lawmakers that I've spoken with, they know that these proposals are not the way to go. They know they're sound thinkers. They can see the data that these things actually make the problems that they care about worse instead of better. But what they're scared of is this extreme right-wing dark money coming in from the likes of the Koch brothers, and they need cover. They need people in their district saying, I care about this issue, and I want you to stand up for working people in this district. And if some of you out there listening to this, call your lawmakers and simply say that we want sound solutions to these problems, and we don't want to be cutting people off of their access to health care or their access to food, for God's sakes, then it will provide cover to a certain number of lawmakers. For those that are recalcitrant and they just will not see the light, no matter how bright you shine the light into the hole that they live in, there are elections. And elections have consequences. And so we need to remember also that we need to hold those lawmakers accountable. This Medicaid reauthorization, or the Arkansas Works reauthorization, comes up for a vote annually. Every single year, it must be reauthorized by the Arkansas legislature. So there's an opportunity every single year for us to tweak it, amend it, and if they do something terrible this session, there's an opportunity to undo that the next session. But those all come down to elections, and to echo what Tomiko was saying, or Tommy was saying, was the your voice has incredible power. And at the legislature, there are, on any given day, 650 fancy suits of lobbyists running up and down the halls trying to tell lawmakers what to do. And oftentimes, when the public doesn't get involved, those lobbyists get what they want. But what we've seen, the only thing we've seen be effective in changing what those lawmakers do, is when the public calls, when the public shows up, when the public engages. And you all are far more powerful than you think you are. We are all more powerful than we think we are. And that's what makes change in the state.
Okay. Amen, brothers and sisters. Well, I hate to ask this, but are there other programs that are under threat of being having access to services and stuff cut back? I mean, if it's tax breaks and regulations to make sure everybody's worthy of any kind of tax money being spent on them. We should do that with the legislators. I think we pay their salary. Are there any other things? And during the fiscal session, are they going to be reauthorizing this upcoming session?
Yes, yeah, they will. So right now there's a few openings in the state Senate. There's like three vacancies, I think, right now.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that's right.
And funding bills require a two-thirds vote. So they're considering who they know is going to... they know that some people just won't vote for it. So right now they're seeing it's going to be close, basically. So it's always a contentious vote, and it happens every year.
And it's passed by one single vote each time.
Yep. Now, that's in February, isn't it?
It's right around the corner.
It starts next Monday. Yeah.
Next Monday. Well, all right. So
this will be in the news. And again, the governor's office and the state lawmakers are really vital.
Well, what do you say to people in the public who, quite honestly, they get up every day, they work hard every day, and they think that anybody who has to rely on tax money is, you know, living off the state? I mean, that is their image of who all these people are.
If you're interested in challenging that thought of wondering why we are fighting against something like a work requirement, when I am also very supportive of incentivizing work if it's done in the right way and that there are resources are available, I would say it's really hard to feel that way close up. That if there are opportunities to connect with people who are living a very different life than you are and struggle to, you know, find enough food to make it through a day, there's always volunteer opportunities to connect with people who are different.
Volunteer at a food pantry and get to know who they are. My dad did that, and he was really,
It changes your entire perspective because you're not able to message some of what we hear all over the place on the media about these individuals. And the other thing is, again, all of these work requirements are based on an assumption that people who need support through through benefits that are paid for by taxes, that they're not already working and that they're not already doing everything that they possibly can to make it by. We were all born into a set of circumstances that we had no control of, and we need to be able to, you know, move the mirror out of the way and be able to see people for who they are.
And we can't hold people accountable unless they're given opportunities for ways out. And
absolutely,
what we're doing, it sounds like, is limiting those opportunities to, in fact, enough to eat, a healthcare system that will take care of them, and some of the things they will need in order to make ends meet.
We're talking about denying basic human rights because they're poor. You know, if to those that say that more people should be working and independent of the government support, they're absolutely correct. Arkansas is 49th in the
Hello, you're on the air. I'm sorry, Bill, finish your comment.
Well, I was going to say that we're 49th in the state, in the country, in poverty. We should absolutely do something about poverty. These are the wrong thing. These are going to make poverty worse in the state instead of better.
Mm-hmm. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, I heard y'all talking about different services being cut back, whether it's health care or food stamps. I just wanted to point out that I saw a headline today that the federal housing and urban development is talking about a proposal that would institute a work requirement for people to get housing. So that would make it even harder because you pretty much have to have a place to live so that you can take a shower, have a nice place to rest, and then go and look for jobs. They're talking about reversing that. You have to work before you can get housing. So I just think, you know, that goes with the rest of the discussion, and we need to hold our state accountable because we have more control here in our local political venue. We got to take more control of our state services because it's going to get harder all around.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, thanks for your call and for listening, sir.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think to talk about other places where these proposals are going to pop up, and we just saw massive tax cuts for the wealthy pushed through the federal level that are going to be leading to big-time federal deficits. Speaker Ryan has already announced his interest in reforming welfare. And when he's talking about reforming welfare, he's talking about more work requirements, cutting more people off from assistance. Again, not providing ladders out of poverty, but providing hammers dropping on poor people's heads as they try to climb out of poverty. And we're seeing the same thing. The state has implemented hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks for the poor, for the wealthy, in the past couple of legislative sessions. And if our economy slows down just a little bit, the state's going to be looking at having to make some pretty drastic cuts in state spending. And I guarantee that who they're going to target are services and programs for low-income people. Again, cutting the rungs off the ladders to help people climb mm-hmm. out of poverty.
Somebody's got to pay for those tax cuts to the millionaires.
And it seems to me, too, that with all these tax breaks and needs for military and other kinds of things and a deficit, they'll be doing some cuts on the federal level too, mm-hmm. and they're likely to be again the vulnerable and the poor. So
the messaging, at least on SNAP, I have to get this in here, is please no cuts, no block grants, no structural changes. And I think that's very simple. And if you ever get an opportunity to speak with somebody who crafts laws at the local level or at the national level, this is the messaging that we want to make sure is out there.
Say the same thing about Medicaid and Medicare and the whole spectrum of other public assistance programs, essentially, and even more basic things like schools and
right.
roads. So
right. All right. Well, I want to thank our panelists, Bruno Showers, the Health Policy Fellow at Arkansas Showers. Did I say Powers?
He's a powerhouse.
Yeah. At Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, Tommy Townley with the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, and Bill Kopsky with the Arkansas Public Policy Panel. Next week, we're going to have some focus on the environment, talk about light pollution, talk about what goes into the gutters and sewers and rivers of around Little Rock, and how do we protect the environment. And we hope you'll join us for a discussion about that. And thank you for listening. Thank those who person who called in, and we'll be back next week on Speak Up Arkansas.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
Today on Wings, the intersectional feminism of Affirm.
On a daily basis, colonialism, capitalism, and imperialism, these are lived realities for women of color in this country.